My mum particularly, I don't think I realised just how tough that was. You know, until you get a little bit of years under your, a few years under your belt, and you get a little bit of perspective under your belt, and you start to go, wow, I mean, mum lost dad, of course, you know, your partner in life. And then at the same time, you're navigating raising two kids, I mean, an 8-year-old and a 3-year-old, and this empire of conservation, of positivity, of all of that. And through everything, she had this stoic, sharp as a tack determination within the business to keep what dad felt most passionate about alive.
Yeah.
And then at the same time, 100, I'm not talking 90%, I'm talking 100% of the time was there for Bindi and I. That was always the biggest priority. Yeah. She is without a doubt the most influential human being in my life. And the person, if I turn out like my mum, I'll be very, very happy.
Have you ever thought what it might be like to lose your father when you were still just a toddler? So you don't really know, or can't really remember what it was like to spend time with him. But in many ways, you've actually come to know him quite intimately through how people, sometimes strangers, have told you how he made them feel. That is the absolute reality for my guest today, Robert Irwin. He's here for a conversation that is extraordinary. We talk about conservation, adventure, how important it is to find your passion, and yeah, what it's like to be the son of a legitimate Australian superhero. Before we get there, I've got to put food in the fridge, and food in the fridge of the people that help me make the show. So we're going to play some ads, and when we come back, Robert Irwin.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
G'day, this is Better Than Yesterday, helping you make today better than yesterday since 2013. My name is Osher Ginsberg. I'm a podcaster. I'm a best-selling author. I'm an award-winning documentary maker. I'm a dad. I'm a stepdad. I'm a husband. I'm a grey water garden waterer. I'm a frequent sauna bather. And as you're about to hear, I am a secret emerging bird nerd. I'm not a full bird nerd yet, but I've got the book. I've got the app. I keep my eyes to the skies. Before we get to Robert Irwin, there are still just a few tickets left to the Melbourne International Comedy Festival shows. We open tomorrow night. I think there's just like a couple left for tomorrow night. It's also my birthday on Friday night. So if you want to come be a part of my 50th, there might be a few tickets still left for that. But don't dilly-dally. We have to leave next Sunday. So there's only a couple shows. We're not here for the whole month like everybody else. My guest today, Robert Irwin, is here. I'm so proud to bring you this conversation. What he has to say about finding purpose in your life is going to absolutely change your day. We do talk about his dad a bit. I didn't want the whole chat to be about Steve Irwin because it's Robert who's here. But we did speak about how he's come to know his dad, not just through the fragments of memory, but also in the reflections of people who spent time with Steve. Now, when Robert showed up at my house, he was with a few people, but Terry Irwin was with him, his mum. There's not a lot of room here in the studio, and Terry Irwin, the great Terry Irwin, was happy to just sit on my front porch, take in Audrey's veggie garden, contemplate the eggplants and the tomatoes and the Roro. It was glorious. I'm really glad that she came because, as you were about to hear in this conversation, probably the true superpower of Steve Irwin had a lot to do with Terry Irwin. And Robert talks a bit about that, and it's wonderful. Robert's currently co-hosting I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here in South Africa, a place he's been to many a time, and we do talk about that. We talk about Africa, we talk about conservation, we talk about photography, and we do get his thoughts on small steps towards positive change as a way to feel a little more powerful in your life. He's a very impressive young man, and I can't wait for you to get to know Robert Irwin. How are you, Robert? Are you good?
Mate, I am stoked. I'm full of back somersaults. How about yourself, mate?
Full of back somersaults.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you're a 21-year-old man, so sure.
I'm milking it while I can.
Look up, please. Look after your knees.
Oh, mate, I try. I live a very rough and ready lifestyle, and the go is, as you would relate, the go is just longevity. So it's hard to do, but I'm working on it.
Because you can't work in conservation unless you conserve yourself.
There you go.
You're welcome.
That's
like, I'm
great.
Here.
That's great.
But it's
mate.
True, though. It's true, though. It's all maintenance. I mean,
yeah, it is.
I mean, you're in a suit right now. People will only probably recognize you in shorts and khakis. Mm-hmm. So it's very clear you're already going out in shorts all the time.
Yeah.
You can't skip leg day.
No.
Never. Ever.
People, no, I can't.
People will know.
There is a bar, you know. There's expectations when you're wearing those khaki shorts. No. Yeah, the suit is strange. It is very strange because, you know, I've had people ask me throughout my life, you know, people will say, I had one person go, oh, you know, how do you feel when you're wearing your khaki costume? And I go, costume? Mate, it's a way of life. Khaki is not just a color. It's an attitude, right? It's who I am. It's like saying, you know, it's like the Superman S. I wear that with pride. Plus, I'm so much more comfortable in a pair of shorts and T-boots than anything else. So it's different,
yeah.
But it's the spice of life is trying something new. You know?
You're going to love, well, then you're going to love, you know, you've been to South Africa before. Mm. You're going to, there's a shop there, they even call it, Khaki Fever. That's a range, it's a chain of stores where you buy your bush gear.
Right.
There's no black. There's no white.
Nope.
Just one color.
It's khaki. I'm going to fit right in, mate.
I was there one day. We were shooting and it was probably 5 degrees before the wind chill.
Wow.
This is right on sunrise. We had to get a shot of sunrise.
Yeah.
One of those big escarpment wildebeest traveling across the planet. Like the whole thing.
Yeah.
So fucking cold.
Oh, mate.
And these boys, because we needed them there. We were in a park. And so, you know, I've got the bolt action 303s.
Yeah.
And they're just like in just shorts and a shirt going, no, it's fun. It's fun. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm okay. And I'm like holding onto a thermos because my hands don't work.
It's a bit like when you go out west, you know, when you go Western Queensland, red center of Australia, you know, when it's hot, it's hot. But before the sun comes up, it is biting, absolutely biting. And I mean, having traveled to some of the most cold Arctic Circle places, it just, for some reason, there's something about that dry desert sort of
cold
that it just rips right through you, mate. Like, it just rips right through you.
But if you're going, hey, Robert, next episode, we're going to go and have a look at the Aurora Australis. You're going to be on Macquarie Island. There's penguins. You'll have a great time. You're like, brilliant.
Yep.
You're packing thermals.
Yeah, yeah.
If I tell you we're going 200 Ks west of Longreach, you'll be like, well, I'll be wearing my big hat.
Yeah.
And that neck gaiter thing that I would drip in water.
Get the stubbies out. Yeah.
You don't bring your long johns.
No.
So it's you're under guns.
You're not ready. Well, you know, speaking of Aurora Australis, there was a point where we were down in Tasmania, right? And I go out into a national park, like a big park, and there's this perfect shot, mountains and stars in the background, but I just couldn't line it up right. Right. So I get my tripod real high and I just walk straight into the water. Middle of winter, middle of the night.
What are you doing?
And I'm like,
who are you, Wim Hof?
I don't know what I was thinking, but I was like, I had to get this shot. So, but it's that cold that the batteries are zapping. It's right. That cold, right? So I'm out there with a whole bunch of spare batteries and I'm like up to my chest in water.
Oh my God.
And then I kid you not, the Aurora Australis just starts and it's just there dancing on the top of the water and in the sky. And I'm just thinking, yeah, that's why. That's why I went out there.
If only I could stop shivering, yep. So the water would be still.
So that, yeah, exactly.
I can get the reflection
yeah.
Shot.
Dedication. Yeah, yeah.
I worked with a sound guy once who shot he shot like 18 times on Antarctic trips.
Wow.
And he was the
tough
first.
Tough biggies there, mate. Yeah, that's.
Well, he was telling me the whole thing. He goes, I don't know, I've got a special jacket that has the pockets sewn in the armpits to keep his batteries warm.
Wow, that's a great idea.
Yeah, otherwise he just couldn't.
That's
he'd shoot
a great
for like three
idea.
Minutes at a time.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know, my dad went down to Antarctica and he was shooting docos. He was very much like, nah, I'll just wear my car keys, like whatever. Like to the point where he was asked to go to host an award at the BAFTAs, right? And he goes, sure, I'm in Britain at that time. It works great, awesome, sweet. And they go, great. Blah, 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 blah. Here's your options.
And
you'll
it's
be
black
wearing,
tie.
You'll be wearing a tuxedo. And he's like, nope. And they go, this is the BAFTAs. You'll wear a tuxedo. And he goes, all right, no worries. You can find someone else. It's all good. And they called him back and went, you can wear whatever you want. You can wear your car keys. Antarctica, same thing. He was like, nah, I don't really like this shot. I'm going to take the parka off, put the shorts on. And he just filmed the whole segment just in his car keys. So that was very funny. That was very funny to me. It didn't matter where he was, it was him. Wherever he went, there he was.
So these are, I'm guessing you heard this story from someone who worked very closely with him and someone who wanted to share this experience of this man with you.
Yeah.
A man that you, I mean, I kind of remember when I was 3.5.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
2.5, mm-hmm. You know. A bit, like it's a blink here and there.
Very faded, isn't it?
Yeah.
See, I am in a very fortunate position where pretty much all of my life, since I'm knee-high to a grasshopper, has been captured on camera.
Yeah, right.
Right. So everything with my dad was on, you know, film and footage. And so I can look back on stuff. And this is a pretty powerful thing. When I rewind and press play on, you know, some piece of footage I haven't seen before, sometimes I'll watch it and go, wow, that's really special. And sometimes I'll watch it and this little, just there's a click just deep inside. And all of a sudden, oh, I remember that.
Oh, wow.
I remember that. And this little, sometimes it's 3 minutes of footage. And I just go, that little point in time rush just comes flooding back into my mind. And I go, wow, I remember that. So there's times in my life where I get these little pieces of him back. But another thing that helps is that he was a literal superhero.
Yeah.
Like it's not like you're trying to remember, you know, some just bloke with a 9-to-5. You know, like you know, the person you're remembering is a force of nature.
Yeah, yeah.
So of
yeah.
course that's going to imprint on your most formative years. But yeah, it's a special thing that I get to learn from the people that were closest to him, hear those stories, see that footage. I'm much more fortunate than most people who lose someone at a young age. I'm grateful for that.
It would be, and I'm sure people would want to do this because they loved who he made. I met him, you know.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Where'd you meet him?
Oh, I think at Kids' Choice Awards or something.
Yeah, right.
I was drinking at the time. I remember meeting your mum there too. Yeah, this is like 20 something years ago.
Wow.
He was one of those people that you never forget how he made you feel.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Is that he's got that thing. Mm. And I'm sure when people, when you're around the world or whatever, they go, oh, and they want to tell you that story. Mm-hmm. You might not be ready for that in the middle of your day. You might be having a shitty day.
Yeah.
You might be like, I'm not, is it, do you have to steel yourself? How do you get ready for that?
It's interesting. As you say, there are times when, for whatever it is, sometimes it'll be some milestone or something that you're particularly heavy. You know, you're particularly going, wow, it'd be really nice to have this bloke around. And it can be challenging. But I think for me, you know, grief is different depending on what point you are in your life. How, I mean, there's no two grief journeys that are comparable. But for me, and what I've found, I find it very special. Like when someone comes up on the street and will say, this is what your dad meant to me, or this is, a lot of people say, you know, I remember where I was and this is where I was when it happened,
yeah.
when he passed away. And people will go, I remember meeting him when I was at Australia yeah. Zoo. I remember this. And people that will say, you know, I'm a zoologist or I'm a veterinarian. I'm in TV. I'm doing whatever because of him.
Yeah, right.
And then the craziest thing is you get people that come up to you. And I've had this a lot and gone, they've said, you know, I grew up without a father figure in my life for whatever reason. And they'll say, you know, your dad was a father figure for me.
Right,
he was like this sort of dad to me, this father figure. And I went, wow. You know, when you hear things like that, I find it very special.
Mm.
I actually find it very meaningful. It can be tough sometimes, but people taking time out of the day, they mean very well by that. They're trying to just share how special this human being was. And it makes me realize, wow, I've got like a little piece of him back. I've got this wonderful story. But then I also go, the legacy and the message that he created is still so alive to this day.
Yeah.
I mean, decades later, it is alive to this day. Thank God it is, because the world's going through a pretty tough time.
I was getting ready for this. Someone was asking me about, you know, what are we going to chat about?
Mm.
And there's a few people who, look, the story of someone who's been globally famous when they're very little beyond their control and what can happen is well written.
Oh, yeah.
We've seen it time and time again.
Absolutely.
And then there's Isaac, Zach and Taylor Hansen and you and your sister Bindi. You know, so it's like, no, he's like the Hansen of environmentalism. Like so astoundingly famous and everyone recognized him on site, access to anywhere in the world, anything in the world, somehow still alive and, you know, balanced.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, you know, I mean, goodness me, I think Justin Bieber turned 18 and got $100 million. Like how he's still alive is a miracle. How he's still alive is a miracle.
Yeah.
You know? But it's just a testament to how people were aware of what needed to be protected with you.
Truly.
How young were you when you realized that, oh, wow, well, the kids don't really have this surrounding them all the time like me?
Yeah, well, when you're little, you wake up and you're like, oh, we're going to the zoo again. Great. You know, like you sort of, it's awesome. Yeah. And it's very normal. Like for me, I did not think of my life as abnormal. Living at Australia Zoo, which is, I mean, it's hard to even call it a zoo. It's a sanctuary, you know, it's such a beautiful haven and a great place to grow up. But then you do start to realize, hang on a minute, like when I am with my family, I'm going grocery shopping and there's a bloke hiding behind a car or in the bushes taking pictures with a big long lens camera. Hang on, he's not really photographing anyone else here. This is a bit strange as a five-year-old. So you definitely, there are times where you go, wow, I mean, surely there's more important things to be talking about in the world. But I look at it as this. I go, I was born with a platform, but I see that as a real privilege and an opportunity to be a voice for fellow young people to say, we've all got a voice. Try and be a voice on social media for positivity.
Yeah.
And try and share what's most important, which is having a purpose, having a cause. Something, you know, mine is environmentalism, mine is protecting our planet Earth and valuing what matters most, which is family, which is finding your own happiness and finding your own voice. And so, yeah, I choose to use this platform while it has its challenges for good. And I feel very lucky that I'm in a position to do that and lucky that I've had the family I have, because that's the most important thing.
Yeah.
Particularly my mum was very nurturing, very trying to make sure whatever I did was where I wanted to go. And from a young age, she said, if you want to be an astronaut, I don't care. Go do it. You do whatever is your calling. But I knew from a young age what my true north was.
Yeah.
Not many people find that, but I knew and I always have. A million different ways to get there. I can do it in my own individual way, but I knew from the beginning, this is what I want to do. And I just had a very nurturing family around me to help navigate the weirdness of a public eye life, you know?
Yeah. The people looking after you could have kept you out of the public eye.
Yeah.
They didn't. They, you were I mean, I remember being at awards and things like that, and you guys were there. You were really little. In khaki, honorary khaki.
Yeah.
It's a great look. A lot of contrast. It's always a good
shot. Probably a snake or something. Yeah.
Possibly.
Yeah.
But I, even then, I mean, you arrive with people today, you know, even then I was like, wow, there's people around them. They're really looked after and really nourished and exposed to this thing that is a part of their life, whether they like it or not. Did you remember talk about kind of the methodology of like the way she went about it?
Oh, I suppose in a way. I mean, it's interesting because I also grew up in a different environment where when I was little, I had my family, but then Australia Zoo, there's nearly 500 people that are actually in our workforce. Right?
Speak stuff, yeah.
So it's a huge community and it's very much a community. And so I always had, like when I wake up, it's funny, going through COVID was pretty clear when you go, there's no one in the zoo, but it's still, there's still 400 people here. There's still 400 staff. You realize this sense of camaraderie, like our team is tight. So I always had a real sense of community around me, you know, kids my own age where when the zoo shuts, you just run around, play in the creek till it gets dark, you know? So I had that upbringing. And my mum particularly, I don't think I realized just how tough that was, you know, until you get a little bit of years under your, a few years under your belt and you get a little bit of perspective under your belt and you start to go, wow, I mean, mum lost dad, of course, you know, your partner in life. And then at the same time, you're navigating raising two kids, I mean, an 8-year-old and 3-year-old and this empire of conservation, of positivity, of all of that. And it would have been so easy to just go throw your hands in the air and just sell it. And in fact, this is interesting, I've talked about this before. I'll keep it somewhat anonymous, but there were various news and media publications behind the scenes that were having running bets on how long it would take before mum sold the zoo.
Wow. Right?
It was... how long is this American lady going to last before she just up and runs back to Oregon? And through everything, she had this stoic, sharp as a tack determination within the business to keep what dad felt most passionate about alive.
Yeah.
And then at the same time, 100, I'm not talking 90%, I'm talking 100% of the time, was there for Bindi and I. That was always the biggest priority. Yeah. She is without a doubt the most influential human being in my life. And the person, if I turn out like my mum, I'll be very, very happy. You know, so that's no easy thing, mate.
Yeah.
It's a hard thing to navigate, but
it's extraordinary.
It was very much lead by example. It's not like, okay, this is how I'm going about it. She just led by example. She really did. So very grateful for that.
Yeah.
Very grateful for that.
And that's, I was just thinking about it now. Like, we all saw the look of excitement in your father's eyes, right? When he was like, oh my God, look at this black mamba, mate.
Yeah.
Just try to imagine.
That's a great impression, mate.
Just try to, it's a terrible impression. Just try to imagine.
Do your best, crikey. I'm putting him on the spot here. All right, ready? So
now
you got
to look. Bear in mind, I'm
got to give it some.
I'm
mate.
Old.
Crikey! You know, you got to give it a bit.
Well, give me some context. What am I crikeying
all
for?
Right, you're crikeying for. All right, you're about to jump a crocodile. Right, you're looking it in the eye and you're thinking, oh, crikey. Now, there's a few different ways. It could be a crikey of what the heck have I just got myself into, and that's like a crikey.
I'll give you the crikey.
Oh wow.
So you got to underplay it, man.
See, this is why you've got the podcast. You got to
underplay
it. You got the voice for it, mate.
Got to underplay it. And of course, when I'm at Australia Zoo, I'll get the close mic. I'll get right in there. I'm like, crikey, folks.
I love it.
She looks angry today. Because let's not forget what kind of human being your mother must have been.
Yeah.
To capture the attention and the focus of this man who could clearly put his laser-like James Bond death machine focus onto anything he wanted and turn it into, you know, an explosion of entertainment.
Yes.
Like, I got goosebumps just thinking about what must he have seen. Did your mother tell you about the day they met?
She did. She tells that story a lot, actually. This is pretty funny, right? So when the zoo started, when Australia Zoo started, it's 4 acres, 2 staff. when Mum visited. And at that point, it was called the Biwa Reptile Park.
God damn, it was too. I used to drive past it on the way to...
Did you really?
I used to drive, of course, on the way to our summer holidays. I grew up in Brisbane.
Yeah. So you would have seen it.
On the old highway.
Yeah, exactly. The old Bruce. Yeah. What was the Bruce?
Mate, it was you and Forrest Glen.
There you go.
And that weird Dino Park on the side.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, mate.
Dino World or whatever it was called.
Yeah.
Before Jurassic Park.
Gondwana Land. Was it
that
one?
Before Jurassic Park, you could get away with having the shittest versions of dinosaurs because nobody knew what they looked like.
No.
And then Jurassic Park shows up and like, I guess this fiberglass thing is going to have to go in the tip, boys.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, so there wasn't much really happening in that
local
area.
So she was just like out here backpacking or something.
So she was visiting from Oregon, from America, and she's with one of her friends. And she's just driving around just on a little road trip. And I think it was the day or before or the day of they had to leave, go back to America. And anyway, you know, they're driving down the highway, what was then the main highway. And they see this little, you know, road stop park. And Laurie, who was traveling with her, Mum loves it, tells this story a lot, goes, oh, why don't we go check it out? Because Mum had a wildlife background. Mm. She rescued predatory mammals. Like, she rescued a cougar. She had a cougar in her backyard. Crazy stuff. Anyway, Laurie goes, oh, this will be right up your alley. There's a little reptile park here. And Mum goes, I'm not going into some little road. This is just going to be sad. I don't want to look at snakes in little fish tanks. No. And Laurie goes, oh, come on, Terry, let's go have a look. She goes, okay, fine. Walks in, and it's a minuscule park. It's tiny. But she goes, wow, this is actually beautiful. I mean, it's so well kept. There's only like 10 animals here, but they're living life. It's beautiful. It's like a little garden. This is incredible. And then here's in the distance, this bloke and walks over and there's a little crowd.
Yeah.
And there's just this guy in short shorts feeding crocodiles. And she tells the story and she's like, oh, I thought those shorts looked right. And I always cringe and I'm not going to go into that. But she'd always go.
That's why you
should. I'm like, oh, it's a very embarrassing story when she tells it. But she just saw this bloke and went, wow, this is a cool dude.
Yeah.
What on earth is this? And, you know, this is obviously before anything, before Crocodile Hunter, any of that. And after Dad feeds the crocs and is talking to the 10 people that are in that day, he goes over. And Mum just kind of gets his attention. They just start a conversation. Mum said the thing that sold them both was Mum goes to Dad, why do you like crocs so much? Why are they your favorite animal? And he goes, oh, it's because it's an animal that can kill something with its teeth. How cool is that? And they're both like, oh, that's what I love about cougars. And they just formed this hilarious connection. And accumulatively, they knew each other after that, 6 weeks all up. You know, this is over months, back and forth, letters,
so she flew,
visiting each other.
Oh, right. She flew
home right after that. They ended up doing the long distance thing, but accumulatively only spent 6 weeks together.
Wow.
And then Dad said one day, what do you reckon, you want to get married? But not like literally just that.
They just
had to fell a dead tree. They're both covered in sweat and mud. And he just goes, oh, what do you reckon, you want to get married? And Mum goes, okay. And then for their honeymoon, instead of going to Fiji or wherever they were going, this bloke over at Channel 10, I think, goes, oh, there's this problem crocodile. Because, you know, Dad was part of the croc rescue system back in the day.
Yeah.
There's a crocodile that needs to be rescued. Do you want to film it? We've got a small camera crew. Do you want to film it? And Dad goes, what do you reckon, Terry? You want to go do it? And Mum's like, yeah, let's do it. So they forfeit the honeymoon to be neck deep in mud catching crocodiles. And they film it. That goes on air. And became the first Crocodile Hunter documentary.
Well, that's the...
make a short story long, there you go.
But
Interesting, isn't it?
I'm grateful you told me the story because, look, I'm not going to lie. Upstairs, we have the book and we read the book to Wolfie and they cover this moment in the book.
Amazing, isn't it?
It's a lot. But like, just kind of just think about, you know, where,
this
when do you know... Like when you think about what we know of him to be, what is it that your mum... has. And I've, you know, just met her at the front.
Mm-hmm.
Like, your mum's got something. She's got a thing. And because it takes anybody who's got a partner who has your dad-like tendencies.
Mm-hmm. Oh, mate. That's a scary thought, isn't it?
That's a whole other kind of wrangling altogether.
That is like, because Dad was just a hurricane, right? Whatever he did, it was a hurricane. And everything you hear, you know, stories and whatnot, and just being in that household, he was 100% on camera and 110% off camera. You know, people go, oh, was he really like that in real life? probably even more so.
Yeah.
I mean, he was just 110%. But that was for everything, you know, whether it was for wildlife conservation or for this or for that, or even just for family. You know, he when he was playing the role of dad, which was, you know, the last 8 years of his life, he was a dad, and that was his whole soul focus. That was it. That was 100% it. Whatever he did was never by halves. And I'm very grateful for that.
Yeah.
But keeping, like, trying to direct that just crazy hurricane energy into anything consistent, that's where Mum came in. To keep Australia Zoo afloat, you can't just be like, we're going to do this, we're going to do that, we're going to build the Crocoseum, you know, the Gladiator Coliseum, we're going to do that for crocodiles. Like, that's what he was. And then Mum would sit there and go, okay, how are we going to do this? Like, and she was the determined force of nature to get all of this tornado and build a incredible positive conservation legacy.
Yeah.
So Mum and Dad were a team, like the greatest team, I think, in existence.
Just going to take a moment away from Robert Irwin to say that if this show does bring you some value, if you've heard something here that, you know, a mate would like to listen to, just share it with someone. Hit the link in the corner of your app, whatever it is, and share it with someone. If you are in Melbourne right now, get around the gigs at the Comedy Festival. You might be able to get in on Friday for my birthday. If not, we're here until next Sunday, and then we have to be done with this room. We've got to get out of the room. Someone else has got the room, so we can't stay any longer. The link is in the show notes, which is also where you can get on the mailing list. We are back with Robert Irwin and just a jiffy.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
You mentioned finding, and you use kind of language around like, you know, I discovered my purpose.
Yes.
I didn't know what my purpose was for a long time. Maybe in the last decade or so, maybe a bit more.
Yeah, yeah.
What would you say to people about what they can give for you? Like if, and how might people try to explore what theirs is?
I think the thing is, it is a very rare thing to find your purpose at a really young age. And the place that I'm in is very unusual. And I'm very grateful that I found that purpose. But I think all too often these days, particularly young people, they have a real sense of, I know what's happening in the world today. I know we've got huge disasters facing the planet, obviously. But where on earth do I fit into all that? How is one person going to do anything about that? And so for me, my message as an advocate is first and foremost, how are we going to tackle climate change? How are we going to do, you know, saving wildlife? You know, we've got our hospital, it's taking in 130,000 animals and all of this. Lead by example, but at the same time go, you don't have to be me. You don't have to be jumping on a crocodile. In fact, please don't jump on a crocodile. You don't have to be crazy 100% environmentalist to make a difference. If you've got five really, really, really passionate people trying to save the world, you're not going to get anywhere.
Yeah.
But if everyone does a little thing instead of a few people doing a big thing, that is how you change the world, because that's how you change society's perspective. And where that starts is with youth, is with young people. Yeah. So that's actually something we do. We have a program with our Wildlife Warriors charity that's directed just at kids to create realistic milestones to go, you know, raise funds for, what's your favorite animal? Rhinos. We've got rhino conservation happening in Kenya. Raise funds for that. Or tigers. Or host a clean up the park day. Or do a school talk about wildlife. You know, it's creating these small steps at a young age, which is so important. So if you can do that, if you can, you know, I can speak for the environmental field, and I know so many people who want to do more. I think that's really where it starts. But then finding your passion is also about finding your voice as well. It's about realizing your own individual power to create change, to create positive change. And we all have a choice, particularly in the social media age that we're in. We all have a choice with the power of our speech and the people around us. We all have a circle,
mm-hmm.
whether it's huge, whether it's small, we all have a circle of people that we influence. And how do you go about that? But I also think the spice of life is trying new stuff. You don't need to, especially when you're young, you don't need to know everything you're going to do. I appear as though I do, but I certainly don't. Like,
I have a secret for you. That is the key to success. If you can convince everyone you know what you're doing, they'll generally let you do it.
Exactly, yeah. But there you go. I've learned something here.
And pay you.
But that's icing on the cake, isn't it?
You might not be the best at it, but like, hey, he looks like he knows what to do.
You know what you do have to find, which you can, is your true north, yeah. right? Your beliefs, your values, your message, the people you hold dear around you
yeah.
to help guide you towards that true north. And for me, I know where I want to go, but I don't go, okay, I know I'm going to do documentaries with this, or I'm going to do, you know, I know I'm going to be a wildlife photographer, and that, you know, I just try everything.
Mm.
You know, this is why I'm doing this I'm a Celebrity show. Something completely different, completely new. Yeah, go for it. Try something completely new. Following my passion, my ethos, my true north, but in a completely different path. Very important to do that. Find your individual way of doing that.
When you were, you know, I don't know, 11, 12, yeah. I'm guessing the part of the world you grew up in.
The bowl cut days.
Mate.
Is that what you're talking about,
mate? We've all had one. You know, I'm guessing that part of the world, there's skateboards, there's surfboards, there's bicycles, there's like how, where does photography show up and how does it show up?
Funny, isn't it? I think it's because I've just sort of always been around cameras my entire life. I was film being born. Like literally, there was a documentary crew in the waiting room. Like it was full on in the room. So it's cameras have always been part of my life and I've always been around photographers and cinematographers and whatnot. But there was just this time where I really started to enjoy it. It was always part of my life. And at about, you know, 5, 6 years old, I got my first little camera. You know, every little kid has the indestructible waterproof camera that you can throw off a roof. Amazing. I had one of those. And I just photograph everything. And it was a little digital camera. I'm glad I was born when I did because I could just, everything was digital.
Yeah.
And I'd photograph the wall and the floor and the chair and just random stuff. And then as I grew up, photography became less about documenting a memory or just having a bit of fun and more about the artistic element of it, the creativity that sparks. And then when I picked up a film camera, that really hit home and I went, wow, okay, this is what the art form is. And I discovered a real and profound passion for the visual arts and that medium. And since then, it's just taken over as one of my real big passions. I mean, lately, I haven't been able to pursue it as much as I'd like just because I'm here, there and everywhere.
Yeah.
But I've always got a camera with me. You know, it'll always be part of me. And I see you're saying. Yeah. As soon as we enter this studio, there's film cameras everywhere. I'm admiring your AE-1. I love it.
The Canon AE-1 is the first aperture priority camera ever created.
The classic.
The Japanese know what they're doing.
They do indeed.
Japanese they do good glass. Them and the Germans.
Oh, yeah.
The Germans.
They made my car. They made my my cameras and everything.
Yeah. Look,
the Germans do too. Leicas,
mate.
That's my main workhorse. Beautiful camera. Look, that.
I think one of the things I liked about before kids came along, and even with kids, I enjoy having a camera with me to document a moment. I think it's important. I don't necessarily I'm not necessarily documenting a moment because I'm looking for a way to share it.
Yes.
So generally, much to the chagrin of the people that tell me things,
yeah,
I don't really share that much stuff about my family
online.
Nah. I know other people that very much do put the...
There's no right or wrong way to do it.
It's not for me. That's okay.
That's fine.
Case it is. But there really is something about, I like having, it's like snowboarding or surfing or whatever. I like a reason to go somewhere. I like having a reason to be there.
Yes.
I don't want to just wander around a street. I'm going to wander around a street with a roll of, you know, TX400. I've got 36 frames today. I'm going to develop it by sunset. This is what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And and off I go. Mm-hmm.
And yeah, you've got a mission. You've got a.
But it's a good, it's a good kind of way to explore a place. But that's, you know, I'm not in wildlife. I'm not sitting in a hide for 3 weeks hoping for an ostrich to do something.
No. Yeah.
You know, that's a whole
it's
different.
It's a lot of patience.
That's a whole different thing.
Oh, man. And funnily enough, only recently have I gotten into street portraiture, all of that sort of thing in the last few years, which is now a very big passion for me. But it was always wildlife because it also became this way of like, it's Robert's way to do the family business. You know what I mean? This legacy that I'm carrying forth, photography became this channel. Mm. It was sort of my own individual way to do it. And photography is very individual. It's like painting. It's your style. So I thought that was interesting. And that photography started to play a big role in my conservation work as well.
Yeah.
Because naturally I travel to places and I'm on the front line of usually, I mean, a disaster, a conservation disaster. So, you know, I photographed the last living male northern white rhino. I was at Kangaroo Island when the fires went through right after and photographing the fields of dead koalas. I mean, very confronting stuff. But I realized, wow, if I can get pictures from the front line and share that, the stark nature of what's happening to the world, but also on the flip side of that, the beautiful wildlife that we can still protect, that is still left. And I went, wow, this is a great tool for my message as well. So there's that element to it too. But, oh, man, some of the whack places I've put myself and the things I've done to get a good shot, I look back and I go, what was I thinking? Like, I was 13. What are you doing? My mum would just go, oh, God.
Well, have you done the thing where you got to spray yourself in the thing so the animal can't smell you and just like wait in the bush for days?
Oh, yeah. That's my bread and butter. Yeah. That's fun. That sort of stuff's great. Like I would do a lot of build a hide, sit there, wait. And it's not very, you do all of that for like 3 seconds of adrenaline. Yep. When the lion comes and makes the kill or the bower bird finally finishes its bower. It's like, wow, that's amazing. But then the other 7 days you're sitting there, you're just watching a bush. So it's you learn patience and it's like meditating.
Yeah.
It is. You go into this like trance. It's amazing.
Is that something you do? Like, is meditating a part of, I mean, you look after yourself. I know you're wearing the suit, but you look after, like you, there's a barbell. Oh, thanks, there's a barbell somewhere that's not being lifted right
flex.
Now.
Well, actually have a look. I've already ripped the back of it. That's a win. I'll bank that.
Yeah, but no, you clearly look after yourself. Is meditation a part of that?
Yes, 100%.
Tell me
and
about
I,
that.
And I don't conventionally meditate. My meditation is just walking out into the middle of nowhere and just sitting there.
Mm-hmm.
And I just sit there with just shoes on the ground in the dirt and I just lay there. And it's just awesome. Like, it's just full immersion. That's why I love surfing so much. I don't care if the waves aren't very good. I'll just go out there and sit on my board and just chill for an hour. Like, I live such a crazy life. I'm at 120%. Everything is just go, 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 which I love. Wouldn't trade it for the world. But nature is my meditation.
Right.
That's my meditation. And it's so important to have and important to seek that out for your own mental health. Very important.
Do you miss it when you haven't had a moment to do it?
Terribly.
What happens?
Terribly. I get real, just irritable, like just kind of like just antsy.
Yeah,
if I'm away from the ocean too long, I'm away from the bush, naturally I'll end up doing something. I'm doing some, late night stint or something in New York, or I'm, doing one of our charity galas in LA and I'm just in a city for weeks.
Mm.
And you go out and you walk around and thank God there's Central Park in a place like New York, which is great. But still, I just miss being somewhere and knowing there's not another human in sight. But the world's running out of places like that.
Yeah.
We, as a family, we've got about 500,000 acres of protected habitat around Australia or around Queensland set aside as natural refuges for animals. So I was brought up, I very much grew up free range on properties out in the middle of nowhere. And that's where I feel most at home. My dad used to say this, right? He'd go, if you're ever having a tough day, you got to go get some red dirt up your nose. You got to go out somewhere where it's dusty, out in the red center, and you're covered in dirt, that's where you're going to feel the best.
why do you think that is? I mean, I've been out to those places, and I remember the first time I went, it was about 2000, I think.
Yeah.
I found myself in a place where I couldn't see another, besides if I put my back to the road, see, there's a road there.
Yeah, but
I couldn't see a man-made object to the horizon in three out of four directions. And I was standing next to my camo and I whispered to him because I felt so small.
Yeah.
I felt minuscule.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if, is that the thing that you get out of it? Is it a humility? Is it a reminding yourself of your actual size and the actual size of the things that are bothering you?
Yeah, and reminding yourself of exactly where you, what your place is in all this. And we're all, I think something we forget is that we are nature. Like, we are part of the world. Isn't that weird? As we sit here with these high-tech microphones in front of our face, we are part of all this. We're wrecking it, but we are still part of it. And there is still hope. And I think Australia as a country is this perfect example for the fact that there is still hope. So when I go out in the middle of nowhere, I'm on our reserve up north and where we're researching crocodiles, and it's 300,000 acres. The closest town is, 2 hours away?
Wow.
And you're in the middle of nowhere and you're sitting there all alone and you hear the birds and you hear everything and you go, that's why I do what I do.
Yeah.
Because pretty soon, if no one does anything, we're not going to have places like this left. So we need that. But Australians, we value that so much.
Hmm.
And I feel like we can be used as a great example for the rest of the world. You know, let's try and value what we have left.
Yeah.
Rather than just rapid expansion for the sake of it.
And seeing that what we have is of enormous, enormous value. And that,
until you're in it, you don't realize it.
We don't, I mean, I know it's your gig, but I don't know. There's two things that are kind of a bit, kind of shit me. Is that I put the wrong thing in my yellow bin.
Yeah.
So therefore, I'm a bad person. I don't care about the environment.
I can say that's all right, that you will not go to environmental jail for that.
No, but the idea is that, you know, so you've got that keep cup. Well, that one's made out of blah, blah, blah.
Yes.
Like, come on, chill man. Out. Like, I want to be able to, like, the soft plastics guy.
Yeah.
I was waiting outside for you guys, and the soft plastics guy, because we have to pay for a guy to come collect our soft plastics to take it somewhere that it's not going to catch fire and they recycle it. Like, why is there not legislation that is like, okay, no more soft plastics, guys.
Yeah.
Figure it out. Like, why are they not upstreamed? Because as punters, if we're being made to feel it's our fault that the world's going to shit while some massive fossil fuel company
is
like,
thing. Just, you got to go, hang on a minute. So while you're saying I am a terrible person because I used a plastic bag, which I 1,000% agree, we shouldn't be doing that.
Yeah.
But I reckon we should also be saying these giant corporations that are milking our planet dry in so many different industries, let's also look at that.
Yeah.
What do you reckon? Let's also look at that.
We're members of the public. Making our best choices with the choices available.
Yes. And
that is it.
You shouldn't feel guilty. You shouldn't have to go, oh no, I forgot to put this thing in recyclables. I'm a terrible person. Because that's sort of what you're made to feel. Yeah. Oh my God. No, it's just as long as you're trying, as long as you're doing something. And if you mess up every now and again, you shouldn't be made to feel like you are doing an injustice to the planet Earth. No.
Yeah.
There are so many different ways to make change. And yes, we all need to be doing the little things within our life. Yes.
Yeah.
But we also need to be doing the big things. You know, we need to be holding big corporations, governing bodies accountable for what's happening. So, you can't get too caught up. It's a balance.
Like there's not form. You know, one of the things that I really look at is you're too young for this, but I remember I was little when it happened.
Mm.
The brouhaha of, you can't possibly take lead out of petrol, then we can't use any of these cars.
Oh, right.
And they go, yeah, I understand that. It's 7 years away.
Yeah.
You got 7 years.
Yeah.
August 1st, 1986. That's the last day we're ever going to sell leaded petrol.
Interesting.
Everybody get ready.
Yeah.
Okay. Everybody get ready.
Yeah.
And
I wasn't around in that time. Would have been a big hoo-ha.
What it did was, okay, there's a good reason to get lead out of the air.
Yes.
Really good reason.
Yes.
And
the auto industry was like, I guess we'll have to innovate.
Yeah, exactly.
And we'll figure it out. And yeah. they did.
Yeah.
And it was okay.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So yeah, yeah, yeah.
The world didn't fall. Yeah. With a large enough timeline, mm-hmm. if you're able to go, okay, guys, soft plastics, over this day and date, over.
Yes, yes.
Whoever gets there first, you're going to be a squillionaire.
Trillionaire.
Exactly. Yeah. If you figure out how to make food safe, biodegradable,
yep.
so it's probably already exists.
Yes.
You know, you are going to be bigger than anything.
Yeah, don't
anything.
Say, we did, you did this wrong, so we hate you. Let's go, here's what we can do right. Here's yeah. what we can all do.
Yeah.
We can all work towards. Yes, that's because everyone, I think, is so negative. That's such an important thing. Everyone, we can't make change if we're all going, I hate you because you did that.
Yeah.
You didn't do this. You used a non-recyclable bag. I hate you. No, we have to all go, okay, listen. We're all on the same team. We're all doing our best.
Yeah.
Let's all move forward and be better together. Let's not just infight because that's human nature.
And there's so much possibility on the other side of it. You know,
yes.
that's the thing that as a country, I think we as Australians have this extraordinary, oh my gosh, we're so lucky.
We are.
We have this extraordinary ability to go, well, I mean, we invented the solar cell. All right.
Yeah.
We gave it to the world.
Yeah.
We can do so many things. When we want to.
What country prides nature and wildlife more than us? No one. I mean, this is our bread and butter. But then at the same time, we've got the highest mammalian extinction rate of any country on Earth.
God.
Our mammals are, I mean, koalas are functionally extinct in much of their range. Like, we are priding ourselves on these beautiful animals while they're just walking out the door. So we do have to get a bit of perspective. Not the doomsday, we're all going to die. No, this perspective of let's celebrate our crocodiles, let's celebrate our wildlife, let's really realize how lucky we've got it here and let's make some change. So, yeah, it's a balance you have to strike. You have to give people, it's easier to give people the carrot, the light at the end of the tunnel. This is what we're working towards, not the, this is all the things we're doing wrong. That's not how to fix anything.
And I
got to stay positive. There's still hope.
We have, there is still hope. There is still hope.
We got this. We'll be right.
And you know, the hope is that we all get to have a functioning food system because the great mystery that nature plays on us here in Australia, particularly, we just don't know which keystone species it is. We don't know which thing is going to be the thing that if we let it go,
it's all
then
crumble.
Something else explodes in population and something else goes out of control. And then now all of a sudden every locust ever decimates every crop. And I'm sorry.
Yeah.
We don't know which one that is.
No. And we hold the keys to that. We hold the world in balance.
Let's keep it all, as much of it as we can.
Yeah.
And wildlife doesn't have to be in your red center. You know, wildlife doesn't have to be that far away. Wildlife is in, I mean, when you were mentioning being, you know, and the bush, when Wolf was little, we would walk around the block.
Yeah.
And I've learned that the words I give him now, they're the words he'll use in a year.
Yeah.
Right? So it's not a bird. Mm. It's a magpie.
Mm-hmm.
Ah, that's a minor bird.
Yeah.
Ah, that's a currawong.
Yes.
Ah, that's a, you know, just noticing around you, just what, that's not a tree. That's a Melaleuca. That's a frangipani.
That's really cool. That's not many people do that. That's very cool.
Just, and that you can just, all around you, there are 100 different species of 100 different, organisms.
Acknowledge that,
within 10 meters of your front door.
Yes. That sounds so much like what we do with my niece, Grace, Bindi's daughter.
Yeah,
it's so similar. That's the time we're in
Bob's
right now.
Bob's her uncle.
Exactly. Literally. Not going to be fun when she starts saying that. Bob's
that.
Your uncle.
He is.
And she knows more about wildlife than I do. Holy moly. She's just an encyclopedia. But it's because you go, as you say, have that, you delve just a little bit deeper. I love that.
It's pretty good. So you've been to Africa a bunch of times.
Lots.
I think, within 20 years or something, 1 in 5 people will be African. Like, it's amazing. Like, it's unbelievably huge. People in Australia have no concept of how massive this country is, how many different people live there, how many different cultures. It's not just
the continent itself. You could literally spend a lifetime going from north to south. It's
colossal. It was deliberately drawn small in the earliest maps to make Europeans feel better about themselves.
It's
not even a joke.
Nah, it's crazy.
What does Africa mean to you, and what does it mean to go back?
It's an incredible place, and it's a place I hold very near and dear to my heart. We have been doing conservation work there for a long time. My dad filmed a lot over there. fell in love with the wildlife. And when he started the charity that we still run, that was a focus, was we got to protect African wildlife. So we work with rhino conservation, anti-poaching, actually very near to where I'm about to shoot this show. Honestly, we do rhino conservation very near there. And with the Black Mambas, which are these anti-poaching, amazing women, all women anti-poaching force, go out and like disrupt poaching. And it's declined by like 90% in this conservancy.
Disrupt is such a word.
It's like
I think I have an idea what fear? Disrupt means.
Yeah. I know.
We're out in the bush in Africa kind of way.
Yeah. Fighting people with AK-47s.
Yeah.
Not for the faint of heart.
Yeah, it's full on.
I would not mess with it. But anyway, I've spent so much time there. Yeah. Love the wildlife. We do so much conservation work there. So it is going to just mean so much to get back because I haven't been post-COVID. It's been 5 years now.
Wow.
And interestingly, I actually briefly went on I'm a Celeb. I went on that show, just a little appearance when I was like 10 years old.
Mm.
And remember being in those ranges where it films. Mm. It's one of the most incredible places.
It's gorgeous.
Yeah. On the planet. Yeah. So to be back in there, it's just a dream come true. I can't wait. We're going to catch up with all of the conservation work we do there. We do a lot with cheetahs as well,
yeah.
Anatolian Shepherd program, guarding the livestock, you know, keeping the tension between farmers and wildlife down, providing opportunities to local people. So it's it's an interesting place. There's a lot of conservation groundwork that needs to be done, but man, look at the tourism, the wildlife tourism over there. They value their animals so much.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's a real treasure trove for conservation possibility. It's incredible.
Just watch out. I'll never forget. Audrey and I went over together to do some work, TV work over there. And Steve, the guy who gave us our security briefing,
really?
Our safety briefing.
I know Steve, bald
big,
guy.
Big, yeah, you
I
know
Steve.
Steve. Yeah, you know Steve.
I think
Steve.
I did. When was this? This was,
I don't know, a couple of years back.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think I know it. Yeah.
All right, now I want you to watch out for the baboons because they'll rip your fucking face off. do not look at them. And look, I don't mean anything by this, but for women, look, honestly, he will smell you. He will know if you're in menses. He will know. All right?
What?
Don't go near him. He will fucking kill you. And we're like, and then when you see a baboon, you're like,
oh my gosh.
Oh yeah, it will. It's like,
man,
big as me.
They got bit on.
And
muscle.
Jacked.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Their teeth on them. Big canine.
Terrifying.
So smart. They're like humans without a conscience.
It's extraordinary,
they're
man.
They're hilarious. Oh,
you're gonna
man,
have
they're
a,
crazy.
You're going to have a great time.
Can't
happy,
wait.
It's Julia's lovely.
She is a hoot.
She's a lot of
she?
Fun. You're going to have such a wild time. The crew are great. The show's great.
It's awesome.
And I know you are just going to have, it's a lot of work. It's only every day.
It's going to be huge.
And you'll be so good.
But I can't wait.
I'm so excited for you.
It just feels like a full circle moment. Having been there, you know, looking at the set, seeing it, and when I was a little kid, now to be taking on that role, it's a massive honor and something I'm incredibly excited to just send it.
Now, Robert, come over for a ball roast on the briar. I've got the briar pit. Come over
I'm
on the briar.
For it.
I've got some
pep. Mate, can I say as well, it's been a pleasure chatting with you.
Thank
happy
you.
Happy 50th, mate.
Almost.
Happy 50th.
Very close.
You're very close.
Very close.
Congratulations. That's an incredible milestone.
2 days, I think it's, yeah. Going to Melbourne. I'm going to celebrate by working. I always love to work on my birthday.
That's great, mate. That's really good. Well,
you're a good man, Robert.
Really
thank you.
Been a pleasure and admire what you're doing.
Oh, that's sweet of you,
very
man.
Much, mate.
That was Robert Irwin. You can catch him on I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here. The link's in the show notes. It was so great to have him here. And I think about what his life could have been growing up with that kind of intense focus on you. That story has been told many, many times. And it's amazing that he and his sister are where they are today. It's extraordinary. A lot, and it's all Terry. I've got to say, it's all Terry. I really loved hearing him tell me how he meditated. I don't think I can get any red dirt in my eyes today. You probably can't either, but I can certainly get some nature in my mind. And I especially like that. That is what Steve Irwin said to Robert Irwin as a way to kind of regulate your body when things weren't going great. That was epic. It was nice to hear that. I've got a tree in my backyard. I'm going to go lie under it and look at the leaves from below. That'll do it, I think. Robert Irwin is such an impressive young man, and to see where he is and absolutely thriving, like I said, it's a huge reflection on Terry Irwin, who, when we were finished chatting, was still out the front enjoying the Melaleucas and our frangipani. And, you know, we went out to say goodbye. Wolfie was here by then, and
There was this glorious moment between Terry and Wolfie, but I will tell you about that another time, but it was it's worth expanding on. But I've got to get out of here. I'll let you go. Thanks so much for being a part of the show. Thanks to everyone that helped me make the show today. Andy Marr on audio post, Mikey Ward on video post, Toe Hider made all the music today. Abby Benno is our producer at large. Ella Bramer-Jones is on the tools while Abby's on mat leave. And Ben and Monica keep the lights on here at OGTV. Thank you so much for listening. Without you, there is no show. Thank you. See you tonight, Melbourne, or tomorrow night. Tomorrow night, I think. Yeah, this is Wednesday. Thursday, we open Thursday. So if you already have tickets, good for you. I'll be back here on my birthday, which is Friday.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Confidence starts with loving who you are. And when your skin feels nourished and glows on the outside, you naturally radiate confidence from the inside. Give your skin a glow up with Osea's clinically proven Mega Moisture Duo. This ultra-hydrating body care features two of Osea's best sellers, Undaria Algae Body Oil and Undaria Collagen Body Lotion. These seaweed-powered heroes use skincare-level ingredients normally reserved for your face for results you can see and confidence you can feel. Osea has been making clean, clinically proven seaweed-infused face and body care products for over 28 years. This luxurious skincare is vegan, cruelty-free, and climate-neutral certified, so you never have to choose between your values and your best skin. Glow from the inside out. Get 10% off your first order with code GLOW at OseaMalibu.com. That's OseaMalibu.com, code GLOW.